Do they love to travel? Have they always loved to travel? Are they comfortable traveling?
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to episode 21 of The Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Thank you for joining me for another podcast where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Today, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, returns for our second broadcast of the Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa series. In case you missed it, in our first episode, we discussed how to maximize the joy of Halloween in dementia care. Look for episode 19. Christy will be joining me every other Tuesday for a discussion to help empower you to be successful as you care for someone living with dementia. She is a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 16 years of experience in working with over 1,100 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Last week, as mentioned, we talked about Halloween, so the holidays are officially here, and this can be a very challenging time, even without the challenges you may face caring for a loved one with dementia. Our goal is to provide you with tips and strategies to turn these challenges into positive experiences for your loved one and yourself and your extended family. Today, Christy and I are going to talk about holiday travel and dementia. Hello, Christy, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm delighted to be here.
And it's exciting to have you back. Our first episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa was a hit.
I think so. I've gotten great feedback from that Halloween episode.
So, Christy, year-round, the question of whether travel is appropriate for a loved one with dementia comes up a lot. And it seems to come up even more during the holiday season. I hear some families who want to travel by air, while others are simply concerned about a road trip across town or state. What do you say to a care partner who asks you if they should travel with their loved one for the holidays?
I have the same answer that a lot of people hate, but it's the truth. And my answer is, it depends, because it depends on where your loved one is in the disease process. If they are further along, it's going to be much more difficult than if they're earlier in the disease process and are able to really process new inputs and a change in routine and still have some self-soothing mechanism in place.
I'm personally not surprised, and I'm sure to hear that answer, and I'm sure caregivers are always a little disappointed there's not a black and white answer, right?
No, there isn't, but there are a couple of things that can help care partners figure out if they want to take this on or how much travel they want to take on. So basically, the Alzheimer's Association recommends that anyone at level 6 in the disease process or beyond shouldn't travel. So what I like to do is use the FAST scale, and I know you're going to put that in the show notes at the end so people can access that. That lets you figure out where your loved one is in the disease process quite easily, actually. This is a great tool. And so you can see very clearly if they're at level 6, then traveling is just not something that's a good idea. So where it's more of a gray area is before someone's in that level 6 area.
And Christy, when we say travel, are we talking about all types of travel, even including that, you know, that trip across town or state?
Right, because level 6 is going to, at that point, it's going to everything, whether we're talking about travel or a meal or getting dressed or hygiene or anything, anything in life is going to be more difficult for someone who is at that level six part of the disease process. So when you put travel on top of the normal everyday throughout the day challenges that they're having, you can see where just a trip to the doctor's office, for example, is very challenging, because rather than saying, okay, let's get ready and go, you're at the point where you're going to need to break it down into what we call task segmenting. So you would need to say, okay, I need you to sit down. Okay, now let's get your shoes on. That type of step-by-step thing. So even if you're just looking at a trip to the doctor's office, for example, you can see how complicated the process is, how much you need to break it down, and how much time it takes just to get from the point of somebody being fully dressed and groomed and ready to walk out the door into, then you go through this process with getting into the car and then whatever time it takes to get where you're going and then getting out of the car. So you think about, for a person living with dementia, that's a lot, right? But right. Then think about for yourself, that's a lot, because you've already gone through the process with yourself. You've gotten yourself ready, your dress ready to go, made sure the pets are fed and where they should be and the lights are off and oven and iron and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're getting another adult ready to go and coaching them through it and being encouraging. And the truth is, it just takes a lot of energy.
Right.
So at that point in the disease process, typically you are narrowing down your trips of leaving the house to things that are essential, such as going to a doctor's appointment. You don't really want to add an extra 30 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever, in bad traffic
right.
to get to an optional type thing. It's usually just easier to have people come to your house.
And that makes perfect sense to me. And I want to just say to our listeners, though, that because I also see that Care Partners want to have this definitive line that my loved one's in level five or my loved one's in level six, but it's definitely not that clear, right? So there's overlap. And again, as we say repeatedly, you really have to know your loved one. And I haven't looked at the FAST scale in a long time, but I'm assuming that's, since you recommended it, that's going to help people kind of understand their situation a lot better.
Right. So number one, as you point out, Mike, the care partner is always the expert in their loved one, always, 100% of the time. You know your person better than any of us professionals will ever know your person. You've known them for years. They raised you or they've been your partner in life. So that's always really important to keep in mind. But when we're talking about the FAST scale, for example, when I'm saying level six, there are actually five sub-levels within that. So a common characteristic of the first part of 6A, and that, so people know, that's called moderately severe dementia at that level six. Someone will need help putting clothes on. Now, you may think, what does that have to do with traveling, right? It doesn't, that itself doesn't have anything to do with traveling. That's just one common characteristic where you can say, if someone needs help with putting their clothes on, they're going to need lots of other types of additional help. And so someone at that stage that needs help putting their clothes on has the mental age of a five-year-old.
Okay.
So that's another way to help care partners think about, is this travel a good idea or not?
Okay.
What kind of limits or what type of situation would I put a five-year-old in? What would I expect of a five-year-old? Would I expect that a five-year-old could do, you know, 8 hours of travel through various airports and not be completely exhausted, worn out, and perhaps have a meltdown?
Right. And it's not a five-year-old that you can just pick up on
Carry
around when you need to as a full-grown adult.
Exactly. Who's going to have some very strong ideas about what they like, what they don't like, and is going to tell you probably not verbally, but is going to tell you when they're done.
Right.
They're just not having it anymore. They don't have the reserves for it. So that's where I think it's really helpful. And as people progress through that level six part of the disease process, we're looking at, they start with the mental age of a five-year-old. And by the time they come out of that stage, we're looking at the mental age of between a 2 and 3 year old.
Okay.
So again, if you're equating that with, you know, that mental age with where someone is in the disease process, you know that for, you know, kids that are 2 to 5 years old, they just don't have a ton of emotional reserves as far as being able to manage their emotions in the way that, say, a 35-year-old would be able to manage their emotions, right?
Right.
They're not able to manage feeling overtired in the same way a healthy 35-year-old would be able to do. And so that's where I believe the FAST scale is so important and so helpful in figuring out what's a good idea and what's not.
Okay, that's very helpful.
Yeah, people earlier in the disease process, when they have, they're having more difficulty with things like making sure the laundry's done, or they forget to pay bills, or things like that, we're looking at a mental age of between 8 and 12 years old. So travel's going to be very appropriate, right? But again, we're going to be mindful of the fact that their energy level is different. So we're not going to say, you know, I live in Wichita, Kansas, but I think a trip to New Zealand is a good idea with this person, because that's just going to be exhausting for anyone.
And Christy, I believe in your holiday guide, which I'll share in the show notes, you talk about asking yourself, why am I wanting to make this trip? What is the importance of this travel I'm trying to do? And I think I think with the holidays, a lot of us, you know, we really want to, our loved one to be able to see other family members and stuff, maybe for the last time even, or take that trip that they haven't taken before. But I think that's a really smart place to start, by really asking yourself what the importance of this travel is.
It is, and the cover picture on the holiday guide is kind of a tongue-in-cheek picture, because it's a Norman Rockwell scene.
Oh, okay.
Which is what we always have in our minds of, this is what the holidays are like, or this is what they should be like. And the truth is, Norman Rockwell holidays exist in Norman Rockwell pictures. That's it. Other than that, you know, we all have, and I think this is a revelation for a lot of people, but we all have family members who are that family member, you know what I'm saying?
They're exactly.
The family member that asks inappropriate questions, or that is on top of you. Oh, you're going to do it that way? Well, I read you should do it this way. You know, that's going to be so-called helpful, but really kind of jump up and down on your last nerve, that kind of thing. So, you know, and when we look at holidays, this is something where, like, an entire society is celebrating on the same day. So you're looking at an enormous amount of people who have sort of the same needs on the same day, which sometimes can mean fewer resources. It can often mean less patience in public settings.
Mm-hmm.
So again, yeah, why do we want to do it? We want it to be perfect. We want it to be great. We want it to be a happy memory, and it should be. But let's go back to not thinking outside the box, but thinking there isn't a box, right?
Right.
So rather than us traveling, why not have people come to us? Is that a solution? Could that be a solution? If it's, well, yeah, but it's just the two of us traveling, and that would be cheaper than the four of them traveling. Well, you know, I think financially, you may feel it more if you send the other four people the money to travel or split the cost with them. But emotionally and physically, you're going to be so far ahead of the game. Just that energy level and the repercussions of things that can happen, right?
True. You know, you mentioned basically the holidays, the best of us come out and the worst of us comes out, right?
Yeah.
And you talk about meltdowns and trying to avoid those, and taking steps to avoid the chaos and the bad times. So I think you have a lot of excellent advice in that holiday guide. I'd love to hear you share some of your top, maybe share some of your top tips with our audience.
Well, I think, you know, number one is, like I said, use the FAST scale, figure out where your person is in the disease process, make a decision after that. The second thing is really managing your expectations. Like I was just talking about, it's not going to be a Norman Rockwell experience. Does that mean your family doesn't love each other? No, of course not. But every family has quirks, and life just has things that go sideways, as we all know, right? So managing, you know, what am I aiming for, but what's more realistic? And as a general rule, if we keep our expectations so low that we can't trip over them, we're probably going to be in good shape. And the third thing I think that's really important is have a plan. Okay. So for example, just like think this all the way through. I tell this story on my blog from like a year ago. My mom does not have cognitive impairment, but my mom and I were trying to travel from California to Florida, and everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I mean, we were flirting into Planes, Trains, and Automobiles territory, you know, that movie.
Right.
So stuff can go wrong. That can just happen. But if you have a plan and you've thought it through, there's a lot you can do to mitigate it. So for example, and this would have helped in my experience too, we had tight layover windows. Mm-hmm. Well, if everything is going your way, great. You've saved a ton of time, boom, boom, boom. But that, how often does that actually happen? For us, that started a domino effect that we just could not get out of, where we were ending up trying to book one flight after another, and just kept getting, it went from bad to worse. And that was one of the reasons, was because the layover windows were too tight. There was no way that we could have made those connecting flights. Another thing a lot of times that we don't think about is having something like a go bag for our person. And I can tell you through hard experience, you know, your go bag needs to include, and this is something that's going to be a carry-on for you if it's air travel, it needs to have a complete change of clothes, including shoes. And I learned that one the hard way with a client one time. Accidents happen. People living with dementia often are older adults. And so they, you know, may not be an issue of they don't know that they have to go to the bathroom. It could be an issue of they do have to go to the bathroom, but they can't get there fast enough. Right?
Exactly.
That's a problem. And sometimes, you know, food poisoning, unfortunately, you know, that happens too. It doesn't matter whether somebody has dementia or not. That can just happen. So, or, you know, travel just doesn't agree with everybody's digestive system. So a lot of stuff can happen. Having a plan for that is really important. Making sure you make copies of things like insurance cards and ID, and you have those things on your person. And just having a strategy in the same way that you would for, say, an 8-year-old that you're traveling with. Having a plan for, you know, is this person going to be able to come up with things to do while we're waiting? Probably not. We're probably going to need to help them through that. So do you have an extra MP3 with earbuds to, you know, play some music for them? Or are there some magazines they like to look through? So there's just a lot to consider. Now, I have worked with clients who were very insistent, you know, yes, mom is in level 6 of the disease process. Doesn't matter. We're going to do this anyway. Okay. That's fine. Be sure to buy trip insurance, because chances are something is going to go terribly wrong and you're going to have to pull the plug on this. Mm. Okay. Another thing that I've recommended to clients in the past is do a dry run before you buy the tickets. If you're sure this is a great idea, take your person with you, go over to the airport, like time the whole deal, just like you're traveling. Mm-hmm. So you're walking out the door, and oh yes, take those packed suitcases with you. You're walking out the door, you have luggage, you have to drive to the airport, you have to park, you need to get into, you have to, you know, okay, lines in the checkout counter, how long would that take you to get through? So you have a realistic idea of how long the process takes. More importantly, how's your person doing through this whole process?
Yeah, well, right? I wouldn't be doing very well myself, especially on holiday travel. It's just such a different world at airports.
It is. So understand it's going to be busier than when you do your dry run. But for example, where I live in the Portland metro area, I'm fairly close in, but it still takes from my house about an hour to get to the airport. And so that means, you know, I need to leave if I'm going to catch a flight, I need to leave no later than 3 hours before my flight departs, because I live in a busy metro area. An accident could happen, and then I don't have choices on how to get to the airport if I'm stuck in that. So think through those types of things. And what if the long-term parking lot is full, or what if the econo lot is full? You know, you always need to have a contingency plan. And so for people who don't travel a lot, you don't necessarily think about those things. So that's why I say, go ahead and do a dry run. If you're determined that this needs to happen, go ahead and do a dry run and see how that works. Then make your decision. Then go ahead and make the financial investment.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea. And I can't help but envisioning myself in that kind of a situation. I mean, I'm walking at a fast pace. I'm, you know, getting from here to there. And now I'm trying to stop myself and help somebody else that can't move as fast as me or as, you know, securely. And then you mentioned like the delay, or, you know, then I pictured, wow, now I got to go stand in this long line of people that are all trying to find an alternative plane, right?
Right.
And now I'm trying to do that with a loved one that's probably in a wheelchair next to me. And I just feel like, I think you really should do some visualization too of all those situations that could go wrong.
Absolutely. And that is why I recommend a dry run.
Yeah.
Because you know what? It's one thing for somebody like me to say, here's all the reasons why you're probably going to want to make a different choice. But some among us are very headstrong, and I'm thinking of me. I'm thinking of my mom, right? We're very headstrong people. So, you know, we can go, yeah, 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 yeah. But then when we actually go through an experience, we're like, oh, that's what everybody was talking about. So I do think that that's really important, because you feel it differently when you're going through it. And so even with a dry run, you're going to have enough sensory experience to make a really informed decision. The other two things that I think are really important for travel, I put them in because they do have to do with travel, but they're useful any time of year, honestly, whether you're traveling or not, just anytime you're out in public, is making sure that your person is in the Safe Return Registry. Mm. And that's through the Alzheimer's Association, the Safe Return Program. And so it's like a medic alert bracelet or necklace that you get your person signed up for that. They have that. And then there's an optional piece where you can get a bracelet or a necklace too. So for example, if you're going up to the grocery store, you get in a car accident, first responders know that you have a person that isn't with you.
Okay.
So they need to find that person and make sure they're safe. So that's really important. For the bracelet or necklace that the person themselves wears, should they get separated from you, disoriented, confused, not sure, this lets first responders know the diagnosis. So your person does not erroneously end up in a jail cell with someone thinking they're inebriated,
right,
or in a psychiatric unit in a hospital. And typically this is the type of thing that did happen to people in the past. Mm. Women often ended up in psychiatric units and men often ended up in drunk tanks in jails. So this is an easy way to not only ensure their safety and that they get the proper treatment that they need, but also to make sure that they're quickly and efficiently reunited with you. Okay, so that's important. The other thing is they're called compassion cards, and they're like a business card size thing. And it basically just says, hey, I need extra patience from you. My person has a diagnosis of, you know, dementia or has cognitive impairment, and basically you're going to need to suck it up, buttercup, because we're going to take some extra time. And so those are great for giving to, you know, ticket agents, TSA agents, servers, flight attendants, taxi drivers, whoever that you run into out in the community. So again, this could be related to travel or not, but it's just a very discreet way of letting people know what's going on and saying, you know, we're going to take the time that we're going to take, because that's how it is.
That's some really great advice. And I think the safe return registration is really vital to as well. And one thing I was thinking of, I know an organization that they actually put a QR code on apparel, and you can buy a shirt. So you fill out, you register and you fill out all the information about your loved one, and then you buy these nice shirts or shoes or tags. And when someone takes their smartphone and scans that code, it gives them the information that you chose. And I'll put a link to that. I believe the company's called, or the nonprofit's called, If I Need Help. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, just because I think it could be very helpful.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that before.
Yeah, it's a really great, they created the company for autistic children who are also prone to becoming separated from their families. Last thing, you know, you want in a busy airport is to lose your loved one, right?
Right, absolutely.
You're very stressful on everyone involved. Christy, some airports, since we're on kind of talking airports, they also have people that can help. I think some of them have a concierge service or something that is a little more sensitive to the special needs of people with challenges such as dementia.
Right. A lot of times it's through the airline too. So look at that. And again, if this is something that you're determined to do with your loved one, I strongly encourage you to use a travel agent. Do not try to Expedia your way through this.
Oh, okay.
Use a travel agent, because the travel agent, first of all, is going to be very well versed in how you access these types of services and make sure that you are set up with these types of services, right? This isn't a wing it situation where you say, nah, we don't need that, we're going to be fine. You get to the airport, go, oh, shoot, mm-hmm, I guess we do need something, and then try and get it. That's not going to work. So definitely use a travel agent to make sure that that's in place. The other thing to keep in mind, again, and you know, it may come out like I'm anti-travel. I personally love to travel. I love to fly. I'm very at home in a plane. I do not have a cognitive impairment either. Right. And if I'm not traveling alone, it's typically travel with my husband, who is not cognitively impaired and also loves to travel. So think about that too when you're thinking about your person. Do they love to travel? Have they always loved to travel? Are they comfortable traveling? For some people, it's anxiety inducing, period. You know, that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. Things can happen. Things can go wrong. Plan for that. Allow for that. And my final thing, and I think this is a big one, think about the bathroom, okay? Especially if you're a different gender than your loved one. You're going to need to be on the lookout for family bathrooms, right, which in major airports, you're probably going to be fine. You're going to be competing for time with families with young children, but you're going to find those bathrooms. Trying to send your loved one into a busy airport bathroom on their own is a bad idea. The other side of this is, like I was saying before, food poisoning can happen to anyone, right?
And it happens more when you travel because it's new foods and stuff, right?
So that's right. So what if you aren't feeling well? Need some extra time in the bathroom? Where's your loved one? What's going on then? So again, just think it through. Think through all the worst case scenarios and have an answer for what you would do in each of those things. That's how you're going to be most effective with travel, if that's something that you really feel needs to happen. But again, I say, you know, planes fly two ways. So have people come to your house.
True. Right. Or drive, or because we have, what we didn't talk about is, even after the flight, and you're there, you're in this whole new environment. And so the challenges and I think we pictured the airplane and all as probably being the major challenge, and it probably is. But then once you're there.
I think, yeah, we're looking at two separate challenges. It's an ongoing.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point, because then you land at the other side of it and maybe you have people that are picking you up that are so excited to see you.
Right.
That doesn't mean your loved one is going to recognize them.
True.
Right. They may not remember that connection. And in any case, they're probably a little bit discombobulated after the whole experience. Now they're back in a car going someplace to an unfamiliar environment. And even somebody who functions at a fairly high level at home in a familiar environment, you will see, guaranteed, you will see a change or the worse in their cognition in a brand new environment, especially after a long day of travel. And when I say a long day of travel, that could be 3 hours total of travel time, but we're still looking at the time you have to be at the airport early to catch your flight, the time it takes to get out to the airport, the time to get out the door, right? So just keep adding time onto this.
Well, yeah, my 1 hour flight I used to take for work actually took 4 hours round trip.
Right.
When you consider the travel to the airport, the waiting for the flight, and all of that, it was, yeah. So, well, Christy, I really want to thank you for another excellent show on our new series, Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa. And you know, thank you to our listeners as well. You know, there's a lot of pressure during the holidays and travel is one of them, but as I think the key things that you said was, you know, really have some realistic expectations and, you know, do a dry run and plan and probably try to, you know, make sure if you got someone else that can travel with you, right, you have a buddy system.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
And, you know, I want to mention to our audience that, you know, I will put a link in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode21 that goes where you can go and download Christy's holiday guide. And she's got some good examples, and you got scripts in there, and you've got some, you know, your Rockwell images, but you also, or Norman Rockwell, excuse me, images, and you got the ones that aren't so Rockwell, Norman Rockwell.
Yeah. I call them reality.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in today, and be sure
thank
to visit
you.
Christy's website at dementiasherpa.com, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. And remember, Christy will be back every other Tuesday for a new episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa right here
Yay.
On the Alzheimer's podcast. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.